Thank you for being a beacon of light to us overthinkers. And I feel like wherever we kind of swim out in our world of words and thoughts and ideas, every time a question comes up, no matter what it is, you bring us to that same place in a way that that particular mind can understand. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Agatha, for saying that. I'm also an overthinker. Well, maybe I used to be, but I've been an overthinker for a long time, so I know how to relate to overthinkers. I know you very well.
Yes, and I love, and I'm actually having trouble believing that you say letting your mind wander and thinking is okay. Because I used to think, okay, if I can just stop thinking, like Krishnamurti, this would be so much better. But let me think, the question that I had, I had it yesterday, and an amazing thing happened. It's because I had this really sort of overthinker's question. And then I think you were in the middle of talking to this young woman, I think Kamal, going back and forth, and you started answering my question, talking to her and to the next person. And I thought how beautiful my question, which I thought was too weird to ask, you went there. Do you remember you mentioned how awareness and consciousness, you know, we're seeing a tiny sliver of it, and you went to there may be aliens. And the other thing that I remember from that was we are God's ideas. And this is kind of where I have one of my questions. I'll stick to one because I know it can get overwhelming. My question at the time was, okay, if we are everything, if we are consciousness, are we, and this is the way I kind of explained it to myself at some point, is the infinity that you describe, which is not necessarily vast, the awareness or God, is it just potentially a point of all possibilities?
Yes, you're quite right, Agatha. The infinite is not vast. The infinite is without dimensions. But if we try now to think, try to represent to yourself something without dimensions, don't represent it as a point. However small a point is, it has a dimension. So try to represent something without dimensions in your mind. You can't do it. So because we're trying to be evocative, yes, not accurate, we allow ourselves to refer to the infinite as vast. It makes a concession, yes, to our sense perceptions,
yes,
and we use space as an analogy. But you're quite right, the infinite is not vast, it is without dimensions.
Thank you. I actually saw it in a dream. It was a point, but when I got to the point was hollow. There was nothing beneath me. It was a point. And at that point, essentially, from there, if you can, well, it just gets more complex, but that's how I experience,
yes,
that point.
If you think of it, Agatha, when you're deeply asleep at night, you're just aware of being. But there's no experience of time and space. If I were to ask you, how large is the experience of deep sleep? Is there any sense of time or space there? There's no sense. So this, when I say that the infinite has no dimensions, don't think I'm talking about something abstract about which we have no experience. Deep sleep, which we all experience, we all look forward to it every night, it has no dimensions. It doesn't take up any time or space in our mind. That's our experience. And then, in the morning, thinking and perceiving begin. So thinking refracts the dimensionless, infinite presence of awareness. Thinking refracts it into one dimension of time, and perceiving refracts it into three dimensions of space. So as long as there is thinking and perceiving, there is time and space. So reality now seems to exist in time and space. But time and space are not inherent in reality. They are how reality appears through the lens of thinking and perceiving. So it's thought and perception that confer time and space on the eternal, infinite nature of being.
And then the only thing you remember from your sleep is the dreams that are in the same language of the living in our daily lives, right? The dreams of, you had the, I heard you killed off Jean and Mary, but it was...
Well, they occasionally reappear, but they sort of semi-retired, yes.
Yeah, but that's all that we can remember in the dreams, because that's kind of in the experience of time and space, right? And that being asleep, there being no thing, we don't really have a conscious memory of it, because how could we? In the way that we think of our current experience. Am I right about that?
That's right. What we experience in deep sleep cannot be represented in or by the finite mind, because the finite mind imposes its own limitations on everything it imagines or knows. Yes. Yes. The very best we can say is we try to articulate. But yet at the same time, we experience deep sleep.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't experience deep sleep, we wouldn't look forward to it. We wouldn't know what to look forward to, but we know it's peaceful there. But so when we call it peaceful, we're using the language of time and space to try and articulate our experience of deep sleep. The finite mind is trying to do the best it can to represent in its own language of time and space what the timeless experience of deep sleep really is.
Exactly. So my actual initial question yesterday that I wanted to ask, and then you started answering, is since we are that, what else are we up to that we have no idea about being just, human on planet Earth?
Well, we can't know, because I've tried to articulate a couple of times, and I don't know how clearly, that in order to experience one thought and one perception at a time let's imagine there are 8 billion thoughts taking place in existence. Now, those 8 billion thoughts, imagine that if you were aware of all of them simultaneously, it wouldn't just be like a Jackson Pollock painting. It would be like Malevich's black square. It would just be utter darkness. It would be such a dense... So in order to have one thought and one perception, everything else, all the other billions of thoughts and perceptions that are taking place, that are in existence, need to be excluded. So the finite mind, it's like a camera. You know, when you focus the camera on an object, everything else goes slightly out of focus. Well, the finite mind is like a focusing of awareness. And as awareness focuses on a single thought and perception, everything else needs to be excluded. That's why I can't know your thoughts.
Yes.
Because if I was having your thoughts at the same time as my thoughts, it would be chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Can anyone here have two thoughts at the same time? Or two perceptions at the same time? It's not possible. Imagine having two thoughts at the same time, one about what you're going to have for dinner, and two about what you did last summer holidays. Imagine having them both simultaneously. It would be chaos. But then imagine having 8 billion thoughts.
Yes.
So in order for there to be one thought and one perception, in other words, in order for something for there to be manifestation, for there to be form, the finite mind has to narrow and narrow and narrow and narrow. And in doing so, it has to exclude everything that is outside its compass. So that's what the finite mind is, a kind of narrowing, focusing mechanism. And therefore, we forget everything else, all the other thoughts. We have to shut them out. It's not that they're not appearing in consciousness, but they're not appearing in the narrow slice of consciousness that is each of our finite minds.
I think my ego is boosted by the idea that we are all those things, including aliens and all possible things. We are that. We don't access it at the moment.
Yes.
There's
we
something about my ego that says, that's really cool.
That's not your ego, Agatha. That's an intuition of the truth.
Thank you.